Welcome to the Red Dice Diaries. This podcast is a rambling journey through the wonderful world of RPGs from the viewpoint of a longtime GM and player. The music at the start of this podcast was Nightmare by Alexander Nakarada and is used under Creative Commons license. So in this episode, I'm joined by Johannes Pavola again, and we're going to be talking about one of my favourite subjects, which is OSR gaming. Now, Johannes, we were in a recent conversation with Dennis, where we were sort of like chatting a bit on Facebook about OSR gaming, and you were saying one of the things that you liked about the OSR style was the things that people do with it, the way they sort of adapt it, the way they alter it. And he mentioned Stars Without Number as a good example of that.
Yep.
So if you just like clarify for the people who are listening, what is it particularly you think is sort of valid about the OSR as a sort of style of gaming?
Well, if we want to look at the core, I think whatever gaming you do is probably fine as it is if you're enjoying it. But OSR specifically, as far as I go, I guess I'm not like, because I started with Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition, I think that's what it was. Some of my earliest materials were translated into Finnish, and I don't necessarily understand which part of the D&D spectrum that came from, but I'm not from the like BX days myself, so my take on the OSR as it is comes from probably like if you could say such a thing, like an outsider's perspective, in the way that there is no old school for me, because I didn't play them. But looking at it now, I really like the sort of like creative and exploratory things that people do under the umbrella of the OSR. Prime examples being a lot of these like campaign settings, essentially, like what like you used to get in like box sets back in the day for D&D, but they do them in like with the West Haven game that we're playing in. We're using the Middlelands OSR materials, which is, by the way, a very good set of two books and some maps. I really like that part of the whole OSR thing, where people take these worlds that they either played in or that just dreamed up and provide these materials for, like, essentially like just like toolkits for you to use in these specific contexts. So, because for, I don't know, probably our listeners are familiar with the OSR, but usually that translates into fairly simple, old-school D&D-style rules. So not a lot of rules and a whole lot of rulings, and you make it up as you go and you have fun with it. So so that's fairly simple as it is, but I really like these like specific contexts that are provided by some of these materials, like the Middlelands. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy the spectacular physical books as well as the PDFs for the Hot Springs Islands.
Yeah, they are some sweet books.
Yeah, so that's probably like my number one thing for OSR. These wonderful worlds, which might be just entirely system agnostic, not tied into anything like the Hot Springs are. It's just an environment, basically, where you can do your hex crawl or you can do like whatever you want with it, really. But these wonderful detailed and like characterful, they're about something, like one specific thing. Like with the Middlelands, it's all about the everything's green and weird and probably slime and mushrooms as well. So it's all about that. And then with the Hot Springs Island, it's about this ancient elven like recreational resort that's being turned into an adventure location. And Just stuff like that. An honorable mention to Kevin Crawford's Reddit Tide, which is a campaign setting book for ostensibly for Labyrinth Lord, another OSR game, but you could use it for whatever OSR stuff. Fairly easy to convert, as these things are. But Red Tide, again, wonderful, a very specific thing to play your game in. So I guess I'm in it for the worlds, really, when it comes to OSR.
I've got to admit, I'm not really familiar with Red Tide. What's the sort of the pitch for that?
The pitch for Red Tide is basically it's sort of like a post-apocalyptic deal in that the eponymous Red Tide came into this fairly there are some differences in it, but this fantasy world from some other dimension, this red mist started coming in, and it spreads faster than people expect, and nobody reacts fast enough, even though there's this seer who's labeled insane because he's the world is ending, we should do something, and people go, no, you shut up, we're fine. And then the red mist overtakes basically the entire world, and this crazy dude gets enough money together to basically buy a whole lot of boats, and then just gets everyone he can onto these boats, and they sail away from the mist, which is consuming the land and turning people into the mist itself is almost sort of an extra dimensional space inside the mist,
okay,
which turns everything into something between Cthulhu and then Lovecraft's more tamer and more understandable Greenland stuff. So it's sort of a awful nightmare dimension inside the mist, which changes and mutates everything. So this mist sweeps over the world. This crazed prophet / wizard leads these whatever people he could muster onto this island, which he has seen in his visions that will be the only place spared. And so you're on this a string of islands. You brought some civilization with you, and this island is protected from the mists. It's maybe 200 meters off the coast. The mist just roils there and has consumed basically the entire rest of the world. And then you have this, it's all mapped out in the books. So you have this island which is divided between the successor countries or empires of the actual mainland that survived, or the reinvented versions of those, and then basically they just slowly decay because they basically lost all knowledge and civilization, but they got enough that they could actually set up a society, but they so much was lost that it's sort of it's sort of like Lord of the Rings in that way. You used to have all these great things, now you don't, and also there's some people who are actively trying to bring the mist in to the island, and then you get your whole Lovecraft cults and whatever, and it's all of this is flavored in Southeast Asia type of vibe.
Okay.
So it's quite unique in that way, and I really enjoy with the flavors and everything. It's a wonderful OSR setting that I wholeheartedly recommend for everyone. Also, as a bonus, as Kevin Crawford always does, wonderful generators of stuff in it, so you can use that for other fantasy gaming as well, because the tools for the GMs in Crawford's books tend to be entirely system agnostic or very easily portable, if not. Incidentally, I ran a Burning Wheel game in the Red Tide world. That was also interesting.
It reminds me a bit, you talking about these sort of these patchworks of bits of civilization that have survived.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the GURPS Bane Storm book, which is basically, it's ostensibly a fantasy world, but the idea is that these extra dimensional storms have sort of hit, mm-hmm, various different worlds throughout history. and whoever gets caught in the storms ends up like deposited like Narnia style in this like fantasy okay. world. So you've got this weird sort of like patchwork where there's like one of the empires is like a remnant of like the Roman Empire at its height from our mm. world, but of course because they were transplanted there, they've had to like choose their own emperor, and like their empire's not met the same fate as it did in our world, and there's like fantasy races who've been like pulled from their worlds, and various mm-hmm. like different sort of earth civilizations that never really met in our world, but they've all yeah. just been sort of like dumped together in this like fantasy world, and they've had to like survive and yeah. war or get on with each other as the case may be.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be used for a lot of fun stuff, really. I enjoy that sort of like you take two things which never like met in our world, so to speak, and you smash them together and you see what happens. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I always quite like it when books do that as well, because I think that mirrors the way a lot of people, certainly I know myself, sort of construct their own campaign settings for like OSR games and other games. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at some like Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, that's very obviously based on like a sort of twisted version of like medieval Europe. The Midlands mm-hmm. is like a weird sort of green-tinged fantasy version of like Britain and the UK. And I think a lot of sort of people construct their worlds by like going like, all right, okay, I want sort of like a Viking / Nordic style civilization up here, and I'm going to have this civilization mm-hmm. down here based on like the Greeks or whatever. And I certainly know I tend to do that, because obviously constructing just like one sort of like civilization whole scale from scratch is like an awful lot of work. It's like very difficult to do convincingly mm-hmm. if you're just making it like wildly different from anything we know, and then you've got to get players to actually sort of like adapt to it, because you're like, oh, you've never heard of any of this before,
yeah,
but you're playing a person who grew up in this civilization, here's some basic yep. info, enjoy.
Yep. Yeah, well, the buy-in is very high at that point.
That's it. I mean, I think it can be satisfying if you pull it off, but whereas if you say to someone like, oh, you're in this civilization, all right, it's a fantasy version, but it's based loosely on like the Roman Empire, everyone sort of knows something about the Roman Empire, and mm-hmm. you can more sort of easily slide your way into it, because you can deal with the familiar parts first of all, and then you can like find out where it differs like later on. So if someone says, oh, it's the Roman Empire, but the gods are definitely real, people know they're real,
yeah,
you can sort of like, you can quite easily get into that. Whereas if they're like, oh, this is this kingdom that I've entirely made up with a pantheon of gods you've never heard of, you have to mm-hmm. do a lot more sort of legwork and a lot more like reading to play a character who's grown up in that setting.
Yeah, I think an example of this isn't like remotely OSR anymore, but our Space Grease campaign, where we basically played Jason and the Argonauts in space with like laser bows and like robotic animals and all sorts of craziness, and I think because we all have the shared knowledge and language of ancient Greece, like we know this, well, we know the story as well, but like we know like details about ancient Greece. So it allows us to be like, yeah, of course it's going to be in space. Yeah, I'm riding my like porpoise in space because that's what happens in this game. But also there is context for all this because it's ancient Greece. At least that's what we said. So you just take these outlandish ideas and you hold it together, or you pray that it like holds it together when you lay out like some duct tape on it in the form of ancient Greece and togas.
Yeah, I mean, part of the point of like, me running that game was basically just go, right, if I take a familiar concept, can I just like drop it into unfamiliar surroundings, like you said, like space and stuff like that, and basically just go, mm-hmm. right, players, it's ancient Greece, but in space, go. And just see whether mm-hmm. it'd be possible to run a game like that. And obviously, if we're going to be running like a long-term campaign, we'd have had to have like put a bit more work in. But since at the start, we're just like, right, we're running through the story of Jason and the Argonauts. Everyone has at least seen the film of Jason and the Argonauts, even if you've not like read any of the sort of actual writings about it. So everyone's again got that sort of bedrock of like knowledge. And then you can say, oh, okay, well, I'm playing a character who's like a bit like Hercules and Jason the Argonauts, but instead of having like a normal bow, I've got like a laser bow or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can just go, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to get back into, because I was talking about in our chat before, I was talking about Starfield number.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I really enjoy in OSR is, and this isn't like in all OSR, because, well, we know that a lot of the games don't work like this, but especially yeah. with Starfield number, there's like Crawford includes a lot of stuff in it that's sort of in the spirit of the OSR. Mm-hmm. So he has the like the basic, like you attack someone, you roll your d20 and you add your attack bonus or whatever, but because it's a space game, it's a sci-fi game, you get other stuff in there. Well, first of all, like his character classes are different. Like you have psychics in there, which Crawford didn't just make into, well, yeah, you're a psychic, so you can just pick like these spells from different OSR books. He made stuff there. So you have these psychic disciplines with distinct powers, and like the way that psychics work is, well, I won't go as far as say like it's completely unique, but it's not something you'd find in the next OSR book is what I'm saying. So it's fairly emblematic to start with a number, and that already spins things quite a lot in a way that I really enjoy, because like I can go pick up 10 OSR books that tell me you can have wizard spells from OSR books, and starts with a number does something else. Which the revised edition also has rules for like science fantasy stuff. So it has space wizards now, and you can use your OSR spells in space if you want to. But like the stuff that's original to starts with a number, the psychics already bring in a lot of flavor that I really like, because it doesn't exist in the general like body of OSR, and it's a little bit different. It works a little bit differently, so that really tickles my fancy. And also with the revised edition of Starfield that number, Crawford includes these what he calls foci, which are basically they're sort of like special abilities or qualities that you can pick for your character. So you start out, you're a warrior, so mm-hmm. you can pick one free focus for your character when you create your character in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That is combat focused. So you take your whatever, I forget what it's called, but like gunslinger or something, that you can do some nifty stuff with guns. Whether it's like you can you get like plus one to hit or whatever, and then you can reload your stuff for free. Or there's focuses where it basically says you can make friends with NPCs. Basically, you can find a friend that's willing to help you within 24 hours anywhere where there's society. So
nice.
So there's like it ranges from, yeah, you get these combat bonuses, and yeah, you get this like mechanical stuff, and then it goes into the other end of the spectrum as well, where it mm-hmm. just says like you. If you want to, you can have friends here, at least some people who are willing to consider helping you within 24 hours, no matter where you are. If you're within civilization, you can find some people to work with. So that sort of addition really made the revised edition stand out to me. The regular version of Starfield that number, amazing game as well, but the revised edition brought in a lot more stuff which isn't really like in the DNA of the OSR, which as far as I understand it anyway, but like this sort of thing really speaks to me, because I like that sort of thing. I would like to have a thing on my character sheet that says, of course I can just go out and find NPCs until I am blue in the face, but I really like it when there's like, again, with the specific focus on things, I like it when it's explicit and focused and like razor sharp when it comes to rules. And I like it when there's I like these sort of rules that affect more than just like my character, even though my character is the thing that brings the rule into the game. Like in this instance with, yeah, you can find people to work with in a day if you want to. I really like that sort of thing. Because it explicitly tells to everyone that this is a thing that we're probably going to do. Like, I wouldn't have picked this if I didn't want to do this. It's an easy, like, shorthand for stuff that you want to do in the game. And you have a thing on your sheet that says, you can do this.
If I remember correctly as well, the original edition of Stars Without Number, it's available for free as a PDF, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Both of these are free as a PDF, the revised and the original version as well. They do have deluxe versions, which you need to pay for, but you can easily run a game with just the free version. Basically, what you're going to miss are, I'm trying to desperately remember if it was the same chapters in both the revised edition and the original, but basically you're going to miss some GM tools for generating societies, like just like roll tables for like sci-fi societies. You're probably going to miss some like robot slash like mech stuff. So that's probably a thing. And then maybe like AI stuff. But that, like, you can do without all that. Like, you still have a full game with a shit ton of GM tools, and it's for free, right? So there's nothing to lose there, and you don't necessarily need, unless you want to run the mech game of your dreams, you probably need those mech stuff in there, unless you have your own.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I do like about the OSR, as obviously in Stars Without Number and other games like that, is a lot of this stuff is available in PDF format, either pay what you want or free. So even if you've not got like scads of cash to like spend on like new books, you can have a look at a lot of these things in PDF, decide which ones appeal to you, and then if you've only got enough cash to buy like a couple of books, you can decide which ones you want to buy. You can make a more sort of informed purchase. Because I know I had the original version of Stars Without Number free on PDF for like ages before I was like, oh, that deluxe edition looks pimp, I'm gonna get myself a copy of that. And it is pimp, to be fair, but I agree with what you're saying about to give like a shout out to like the random charts. I mean, I'm a massive fan of random charts. It's one of the things I like in a lot of OSR games. Anything that sort of like works as an idea generator, or like if I'm a bit stuck, I can look at a chart and like roll a dice and then go like, oh yeah, that's a cool idea, and just like it gets my brain working. And I think the sort of sector creation rules in Stars Without Number are absolutely great. And
fantastic.
I know I've mentioned the website Sectors Without Numbers to yourself before. Anyone who's thinking about sort of getting into Stars Without Number, I advise you to have a look at that, and I'll try and put a link in the description of this video. But it lets you make like a sector of space randomly using these rules, like using a website, and then just sort of like tweak it to meet your needs. So effectively you can just be like, boom, that's pretty much like my campaign map done.
Yeah, and it goes into like, you don't properly realize the detail it goes into until you roll up a sector. There was a previous previous generator site for the original version, and it went down for a while. I don't know why, but I think it's still like it's working again. But anyway, this new generator, so Sectors Without Number, it goes into it uses the tools right from the book, but using those tools, it goes into I think quite the incredible detail on like what it generates, right? Because it generates you star systems on a hex map of, I think the like standard size is like 10x8. So it generates this sector of space for you. It generates stars in there. It generates planets in there. It generates moons for those planets. It generates other sites of interest in space, so like deep space stations. It generates obviously, like, there's a limited amount on all of these roll tables of different stuff, so you're gonna get some duplicates, but like whatever. You're gonna get deep space stations. You're gonna get like what's the current problem or situation in each of those deep space stations. So you get this large map with a lot of detail, for both like planets and moons and like other installations in space, and you get plot hooks for basically each thing on the map already built in, and that's quite amazing. Obviously, like all, if you were to do this by hand, which you can, I've sort of done it, but when you click the generate a new sector, what you're doing is you're automating like hundreds and hundreds of dice rolls, and the fact that you can just do it with an online tool is fantastic. And like John said, I would very much recommend you go there, because that it's so easy, and it's just like you could go there right now, click on it, and have a ready-made campaign world for your game for several years going forward.
The nice thing about it as well is, if you get like the, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've been on it, you can like re-roll the individual elements on the
site. Can pick if you want to, like you could just pick from the tables as well.
Yeah, so you can sort of tweak it if it doesn't precisely match what you want, and there's a few like manual bits you can do, like you can add in like trade routes and bits and pieces like that. So it's nice because it lets you just sort of click on generate and you're like, right, boom, there's the background, but then you can still do the sort of fine tuning of it yourself. It just means you're not sat there for like 4 hours like rolling dice to like generate all the basics. You can just click on one button and it's done in like a few seconds, which I think that's what sort of like automation in gaming should be about. It doesn't entirely take away your sort of agency to like change things and create things. All it's doing is basically saying, like, I'll do the heavy lifting. Then once I've got all the basics sorted out, you come in and just sort of put the final bit of polish on it and sort of make it what you want it to be.
Yeah, and I think, especially in this case, right, like the end product is what you're looking for. Obviously, it's fun to like throw dice and have ideas while you're doing it. I really enjoy just like get yourself a blank hex map of 8x10, and you just start like throwing dice, and you get some ideas for stuff immediately when you're working with these generators. That's fun, but like when you're looking at starting a game, what you want on your table is a map that's laid out and that has like relevant stuff on it, and the fact that you can just do that, and essentially like not like you're not giving anything away, like you're not losing on anything. You just automate this extensive process, and the thing that you desire is the end goal anyway. I think this is probably the like outside of like SRDs for some games, this is probably the most useful tool online for RPGs. Of course, this is just for this particular RPG, and so it's useful only in that context. Or like you could just make, again, it's largely system agnostic, so as long as you like the flavor of the stuff that it generates, you can just use this for your space games, whatever you're doing. But it's incredible how easy this thing is to use. And you can add stuff as well. Like you can only not just like change stuff, you can add stuff as you like.
Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things about it as well is if you're running like an online game, it's easy enough to like screen share it and be like, right, here's the map, boom, lovely jubbly. But there's also like a number of different options for exporting it. Like there's a condensed option where you can sort of print all the information out like a table format, so you've got like a sort of condensed, easy reference. And then there's like an expanded version where there's like lots of white space left in. So if you went to like go old school and like write by hand over all your notes, you can still do that. And if I remember correctly, there's even a JSON format export which sort of does it in a format that some of the various different campaign software uses. I know Campaign Logger uses JSON format, although I don't know precisely what would be involved with like importing entries and whatever. Yeah. So I've not done it myself.
I also believe that you can basically use the platform of sectors with a number to share your sector map with your players, and you can there's toggles in the generator. You can choose which things are shown and which are not, and there are text boxes for information that you can just have for yourself as a GM, like GM specific notes. If you want to write something down, you just put it in there, and you can share the you can just share like a link to sectors without number that your players can use to look at the sector, or at least the parts that you have left open for them to view, which I think is really good for especially online gaming.
Yeah, I've just clicked on it now to sort of have a look at what the differences are between the sort of player view and the GM view, and it seems to basically be that, like, when you click on planets and systems where you've got like information about them, when you're in the player view, you get like the generic information, like you get like what the atmosphere's like, what the temperature's like, if the biosphere supports life, if it has a population, what the tech level is. So all the basic information you gather from like an orbital or like close surface scan. Whereas obviously when you go into the GM bit, you've got sort of like all the various like planet tags and plot hints and stuff that's going on there.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Because your atmospheric scan doesn't show that actually everyone on the planet is a cannibal and you shouldn't go there.
Wait, it's funny you should mention that, but the random planet I've just clicked on, one of the tags on it is zombies.
Yeah.
But I quite like the fact it then, like you say, it gives you these little tags underneath where it's like different suggestions. Like for enemies on this zombies one, it's got like soulless Maltech biotechnology cult, sinister government agent, and crazed zombie cultist. It's like if you can't think of a plot to do with that, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole deal with these tags that are in each of Crawford's. Like these big books and some of his smaller books as well, because he does like supplements for his games. He creates these tags as a way of it's a shorthand for you to whip up a game in like half an hour and have it be like about this thing, because you can just pick the zombies tag and then you go, well, I want zombies, but like what can I do with them? And then you can just say, Well, there's these location suggestions under the zombie tag, which that sounds cool, so I'm going to pick that, and then I'm going to have the like soulless Maltech cult operate in there, and I'm going to have some fun with zombies with my friends tonight. And that is wonderful. And there's actually in one of Crawford's games called, Silent Legions, which is Crawford's like modern day, at least that's implied, like modern day OSR Lovecraftian. I sort of want to add like point crawl on top of that pile of categories, but it's like that's not mandated in any way. But it's basically you play these like Lovecraftian investigator heroes, obviously more in the style of pulp rather than I'm playing a scary horror game, and the game is essentially about your characters bouncing around in whatever area you've chosen, whether it's just a city or a county or an entire country, and you as the GM seed that place with these different cults, for which, given it's a Crawford game, there's a shit ton of generators for this. So you generate these cults and you sprinkle them all over the place, and you figure out adventures, so to speak, or like shit for them to investigate, that like eventually like leads back into these cults. And these cults will be like competing against each other as well. Like they have their own dark deities that they worship, and maybe they don't agree. Maybe their gods are enemies, so they have a holy war going on, and your investigators are in the middle trying to figure out what's what. And in that game, Crawford actually goes and creates this sort of system for generating like mysteries or like stuff to investigate. So it's a breakdown of the mystery. So you start from okay, so like what happened, or like the essentially like the end result, and then there's a like step-by-step process of how you work back from that, and insert some of that investigation goodness into your games. Also, Crawford's these tags that he has, not only are they just fuel for you, because you can see, like you said, you can see, oh, these are suggestions for enemies in this zombie place. You can also find in probably, again, all of his games, this list of probably, I think it's 100, like a D100 table in each of his books of plot seeds, which are basically the PCs and then like brackets, friend is being harassed by brackets enemy in brackets location because of brackets complication. And then you pick your location tag, you fill in those words from the tag, and then you have your thing, like what's happening.
So it's sort of like a Mad Lib sort of thing, you know, you've got like a template and you fill it in.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Which, of course, like it's not like super detailed or anything, but like if you want to, you can throw your D100 and you just go, well, I'm going to use the zombies and like the desert, and then I landed on this formula, and then I'm gonna try and insert these things into these places on the sentence there to figure out if it's something I want to do.
Well, I think we've sort of successfully turned this this episode into a why you should buy Kevin Crawford's Get RPGs
or get them for free, because his stuff is free if you want to get the PDFs at least.
That's true. Yeah, I do very much agree with you. I mean, I think one of the strengths of the OSR movement is the fact that the idea that the basic rules are sort of fairly simple and they're already like locked down gives people license to then go, all right, the basics are done. I can just focus on like my own little bits or the bits that interest me, whether that's a campaign setting, whether it's like a news system, whether it's some random charts. Whatever. I also think one of the advantages of that is we talked earlier, obviously, about how if you've got something that's familiar in a campaign setting, it's easier to sort of get into it and then just focus on the differences. Yeah. I think the same also goes for rule systems, because I mean, let's face it, I mean, I'm nothing against learning like new rule systems, but pretty much like every role player has at least some basic experience of like some version of D&D. So I think one of the major benefits of OSR is that if you've played any version of D&D at all, really, apart from maybe 4th edition, because that was quite different, you're going to have no problem really adapting to an OSR game in terms of the mechanics, although I appreciate that the mindset of some of the earlier stuff is a bit different to some of the later stuff. But if you say, if you're like, oh, I've played a bit of D&D, then you go and pick up Stars Without Number, the basics of the rule system will be very familiar to you. So then you're like, all right, okay, I can just play a basic character, I'm not going to worry about anything. Or you can go, right, well, I've only got to learn like what's different about psychics and my psychic powers, because I've got the basic rules locked down already. So I think that frees you up to focus on what makes an OSR game unique from all the others, or at least a bit different from all the others, without having to worry about learning the thing whole cloth.
Yeah, and I think that's, well, at least for most OSR games that I'm aware of, usually it's a very bad idea to just run in and immediately escalate everything into a physical conflict. And that fact, combined with the very transferable understanding of how that sort of thing works in OSR games, I think it's a clue that eventually everyone's going to pick up, like, this isn't the thing that's important here, because it's quite simple, you already know it, and you'll figure out in short order that it's a bad idea most of the time. And then you focus on, okay, so if this is like this is the baseline, right? And it like it's not the by far it's not the best thing to do in every situation. Like, what else can I do?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably like divert some efforts like away from just picking the straightforward solution and using your massive mace to crush your opposition.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost sort of like perversely, the one of the strengths of the OSR rules system is the fact that it encourages you a lot of the time, as you say, to not use the OSR rules system.
Yeah, which I have some thoughts about that, but I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I mean. Again, it comes down to this like rulings over rules thing that gets mentioned a lot. But I think certainly for myself, I mean, I sort of came into like the OSR fairly recently, and that was after playing a lot of newer games like Fate and stuff like that, which again have very simple rules, and they sort of they have like one or two sort of strong core mechanics that apply to everything. And it's like whatever you want to do, whether it's someone falling off a cliff, it's someone trying to mingle with some NPCs, someone trying to hide in a bush and leap out and like whack someone over the back of the head,
yeah.
You can do it with those basic rules. You don't have to look up like an individual rule for that specific thing. And I think, sort of, oddly enough, when you sort of look back at the OSR games, again, they have that similar thing. It normally comes down to like either an attribute test, a skill test, or like rolling a d20. And that's pretty much it for the majority. So that sort of frees you up to go, right, well, since I'm not worrying about the rules, all I've got to worry about is what my character's doing, and I know it's covered by the rules. Whereas I tend to find in games like 5th edition, and I've no problems with 5th edition, I enjoy playing it. It's a different type of enjoyment, but I do enjoy it. Whereas I find in 5th edition, certainly when I'm playing it, and sort of other games of that ilk, when I get into a situation, I'm sort of more focused on like poring over my sheet and going like, all right, what ability or like feat or like spell or what have I got that I can use to help me in this situation? Whereas when I've played like an OSR game or a slightly more rules light game, I'm less focused on poring through my character sheet and I'm more just like, right, what's my character going to do in this situation?
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably like a couple of hard takes on this, which like you just represented one, which is like, yeah, because it's like I can basically improvise the solution to my problems. It is what it is with OSR a lot of the times, because you don't have the thing there, which I quite enjoy, even though, like I said before, I do like the explicit, sharp, very specific rules, like I mentioned with you can find friends here. So I enjoy that sort of thing, but I also enjoy the fact that you are free to try a lot of stuff. And I think, well, this is the thing, right? Because I think almost every OSR game or retro clone of your choice probably at some point says, yeah, the rules aren't quote unquote complete, and we have left some holes in it, and that's deliberate.
Yeah.
And this is a rules. These are the rules, and then the rest are going to be rulings. I don't know if it's ever spelled out, but I think a lot of OSR boils down to just a shared sense of drama and trust between whoever's playing there, because you're relying so much on the rulings of the person running the game, because usually OSR products tend to say, well, the GM or the DM has final say. They are God as far as this game goes.
Yeah.
So you listen to them or you die. And I think it could use some more highlighting, at least I would prefer if it was spelled out. And this isn't like, I'm not trying to underestimate people or anything, but I would like it to be as explicit as the fact that there's one guy at the table who can decide whatever at any point in time. I would like it to be spelled out that you can, the most fun you will have with these games is when you trust your fellow players not to be assholes, because we don't have rules here to prevent them from being that way. And we're trusting you all to be adults, which I realize it sounds dumb to like call for this sort of thing, because it's like you should just assume that, but I think it would help when that's not the case.
Yeah, I can certainly see your point there.
So like this is my perspective into OSR. I think it's like the rules are just incidental, and all of it comes down to are you feeling the same kinds of vibes as the other people at the table, and do you trust them to do some fun stuff with you? And that's the game, which again, like that relies entirely on the people playing it and very little on the game itself.
Yeah, and I think that's a great note to end this episode on. So Johannes, thank you very much for joining me again.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So that's it for this episode. If you have any questions or suggestions for things you'd like to see in the podcast in future, please either email them to reddicediaries@gmail.com or drop me a voicemail at Anchor. Until I see you next time, whenever you're playing, take care and enjoy yourselves.